to Cairo Nights. I'm Jack Stein on a Monday evening. I got to tell you that I was subjected to some misinformation over the weekend, but I guess it was of my own making. I heard about that officer who had been killed during a traffic incident, and I kind of want to talk about how sometimes just a little bit of information can lead somebody to a wrong conclusion. So I woke up, and what I read was Seattle police officer killed during Bellevue traffic incident. Again, the story just says a Seattle police officer was killed Sunday in Bellevue during a traffic incident, a Washington State Patrol spokesman and another law enforcement source said. This is a developing story and will need to be updated. And my initial thought was, oh, well, this was obviously an officer who was shot when issuing a ticket. This is obviously an officer who was attacked in some way. And lo and behold, I was completely wrong about that. But I think it goes to show how just a little bit of information like that in this era that we live in of news on demand, how just the smallest little piece of information can cause even a world-renowned news expert like myself to make a bunch of inferences about that piece of information. So I decided to drown my sorrows in reading the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, which is something that I do on a regular basis, and I found an article about misinformation, and I found an article about what it means to take in the wrong kind of information and how our brains kind of manipulate that information over time to fit our world narrative. And I want to get into it before we are joined by Hannah Scott, who's going to be giving us all the details on that officer who was struck on I-5, and who was killed, because the story is much different than what I initially thought it was, and what, in many ways, just that little piece of information made it seem to be. This was an officer who was off duty, who was getting out of her car, who was trying to help other people who had been into a car accident, and who was hit by a car. Totally different from what we could infer from that initial piece from the Seattle Times. So, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette says the human brain is not wired to do a very good job of identifying reliable news sources. Our hardwired cognitive biases ensure that we hope to be true about our world biases, our perceptions, and what is actually true. And I'll tell you, this is so accurate. This is so very accurate because I was thinking the other day when I was reading about the state lottery, the whole vaccine, jabs for joints, we're going to give people money if they get vaccinated. I was thinking to myself, how many people out there are going to fall for a scam? How many people out there are going to get a call from some random number on the day that the lottery is set to take place, and this person is going to say, give us your account information, give us your social security number, give us your mother's maiden name, and they're going to be taking advantage of people? I had the foresight to see this, but I guess the state did not, because the state is now issuing warnings against Washington vaccine lottery scammers. And I thought to myself, yep, exactly what I thought was going to happen. So again, officials are warning Washingtonians to be aware of scammers claiming to be linked to the state's shot of a lifetime vaccine lottery. Washington's lottery says that it received reports about unknown scammers who have attempted to use the contest to trick people into handing out their personal information. Exactly what I thought would happen. With that in mind, the state attorney general's office has issued a reminder on Monday that the lottery officials will never ask for your bank account information, personal details, social security numbers over the phone. If you are a winner, you may be contacted by the state by phone, email, or as a final method of outreach, text message. Typically, a phone call from Washington's lottery will come from one of two Western Washington area codes. That would be 253 or 564. And they go on to say that if you have any doubts over the legitimacy of callers, you can go to My Northwest, you can check it all out. But I think that that reinforces this idea out there on any issue in particular, how easy it is to be duped and how easy it is to be fooled, or how easy it is to take a piece of information and kind of infer outwards from it. I was talking to the missus, you know, I was talking to Sarah, and I said, oh man, Monday's going to be rough. And she says, why? And I said, well, I think an officer was just killed in a traffic stop. I think we're going to have another incident in Washington where an officer was killed, and there's likely going to be protests of some kind. I had developed this entire world narrative out of what my day was going to be like today, because of this little piece of news. Now, again, standing corrected, I think it's important to recognize that this could happen to anybody. This article at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette says, generally, humans rarely evaluate whether information they receive is true or not. When we do, we tend to look for information that confirms our existing beliefs, avoid information that does not, and interpret information to make it consistent with what we already believe. We look for information that makes us feel good about ourselves and sheds a positive light on the groups to which we belong. When our beliefs and reality are misaligned, one would think that we would change our beliefs to match reality, but instead we often try to bend reality to fit our pre-existing views. I think that this is why having a healthy news diet is so important in this era of misinformation and in this era of disinformation. That if you can go out and if you can pull from different sources and not just take information from one singular source, you are varying your diet to such a degree that you have a healthy news metabolism. I don't think we think about it enough in terms of, let's just say that you only watch Fox News. Let's just say that that's all you take in, or you only listen to Cairo Radio, or you only read the Times, or whatever it is, that a diversity of opinions is what really contributes to a well-rounded individual, that a diversity of thought is what really contributes to a well-rounded individual. People say to me all the time, they say, Jack Stein, how can you have such lefty friends? How can you associate with such lefty people? It is an exercise for the mind. I talk about this a lot, that when you go out of your way to engage with people with whom you disagree with on a regular basis, and it's not a shouting match like with your Uncle Thomas at Thanksgiving, and it's not a debate or anything like that where you're very formal and you're saying, well, sir, I do believe that this should be the conclusion. When you're just talking to somebody, when you're just chatting with somebody, and you are empathizing with somebody, I think that that makes much more of a difference and contributes to a healthier mindset than the current echo chamber that we find ourselves in. It would be all too easy, I think, for anybody just to kind of sit around and live in that echo chamber. In many ways, we've atrophied our minds. We've kind of allowed ourselves to become very lazy. And I'm not excluding myself from this at all. I took a look at a little teeny tiny blurb from the Seattle Times on my phone. I got that notification and I thought to myself, oh, I know exactly what's going on in this circumstance. And then again, more information came out over time, and then we change our opinion over time, and we take in all this information and we say to ourselves, oh, okay, now I have a fuller picture of the issue. It sounds so simple. It sounds so easy. But there are so many studies out there that suggest that most people just read the headline when it comes to an article, and they might read the first three or four paragraphs, and then after that, they kind of fill in the rest. In an effort to try to expedite the process, they just kind of fill in the rest as they move along. So I think as we are waiting for Hannah Scott to get on the line, one of the things we could take from this incident, whether it's the lottery scammers or whether it's me reading that article from the Seattle Times, one of the things that we could take from this is to slow it all down just a little bit and to try to make it just wait a little bit more for all this information to come out before we jump to any conclusion. So Hannah Scott is on the line. Hannah Scott, I awoke yesterday morning to a headline from the Seattle Times that said that an officer of the law had been killed in the line of duty and that there were no details. And then I heard that an officer of the law had been killed in the line of duty by a vehicle and that it was vehicular manslaughter. And I thought, oh, so somebody intentionally targeted it, because the way that it was written said
no, yes, all wrong so far.
It was
all,
yeah, thanks, Seattle Times. And so, but the way that it was written, the insinuation was is that this was an officer of the law who was doing something on I-5, and then another car maliciously pulled up and ran into that officer. And I thought, this is going to be breaking news. And then throughout the day, they kept correcting themselves as more details came out. And then eventually it came to the story that we now know. Hannah Scott, can you fill in the details for us to let us know exactly what transpired?
Sure. You know, Saturday night into Sunday morning, early Sunday morning, it was rain, a lot of rain on the streets of Seattle.
Right.
And been not raining for many days before that. So that always makes the roads kind of funky when you first start to get the rain on it. People drive a little not safe. And that had caused a 13-car pileup on I-5 right near downtown. Now, as tends to happen, right behind that, another crash in the backup of three vehicles. Now, Officer Lexi Harris she's been with the department 5 years. She had been working until about 1 a.m. She got off work. She was not on duty. She was driving home. And I don't know if you've ever worked those shifts, but when you get off at 1 a.m, you're like, you want to go straight home. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So she didn't. She stopped in that second crash with the three vehicles to help the state patrol off duty in her personal vehicle. Almost immediately when she got out of the car, she was hit by a vehicle and then she died very, very quickly.
Wow. There at the scene.
But that driver, and I want to make sure that the listeners get this, that driver who hit her was a part of that crash and stayed at the scene and was cooperating with police. It was, they have not said whether there was any impairment or anything like that yet, but that driver did stay. It was another driver involved in that same three-car crash who, I don't know, I think their car was trashed from the wreck or something. After seeing this officer get hit and killed, that driver jumped in her personal vehicle, the officer's, and stole it to get away. And that's what was
going on. Wow. Okay. So this is what I find so fascinating about this, because I had to kind of move through everything on my Northwest to actually find out the truth of what happened. No thanks, Seattle Times. Because again, when I woke up yesterday, the misinformation was just kind of abounding around the issue, and the pieces about it were so poorly written that any logical person would say, oh, okay, this officer was targeted by somebody who hit them with a car,
right,
and then got back in their car and then left and drove away. So I'm very appreciative for you to come and clear that up for us, Hannah Scott.
You betcha. I had the benefit of reading the late version, so many hours later.
Yeah.
It's not the first time. That tends to happen, you know, especially over the weekend. Breaking news, you get a couple of lines in there and not everybody knows what's going on, or somebody spoke too early or something like that.
Right. So the response from SPD has been, or at least the response has been...
They're just devastating. It is emotional for the officers involved. So this is a state patrol investigation because it happened on I-5.
Right.
But they had a press conference. You had an assistant chief come out and say a few words. Just devastated. They're just devastated. He said, this is, by all accounts, from every angle that I've talked to, from people in community, from people in the police department, from anyone who knew this woman, this officer, the best officer that ever existed. She was the epitome of what everyone's been talking about we need as far as policing goes. She had been on this force for 5 years. She worked in the officer wellness program as was one of her things that she was really focused on to make sure cops have good mental health, good physical health.
Right.
She was a friend of mine had done an interview with her during the protests last year that he sent over to me earlier today. And I listened to her. She's so full of grace, and her ideas about defunding and all of that. She said, look, we need to all find a way to work together. We need to not throw everybody in the slammer for drugs and homelessness and things like this. We need to find solutions, but we need to be able to work together with more officer involvement for like diversion and things like that. She was very much somebody who wanted to bring about change and probably could have done it.
Yeah. And it makes me think about, now that we have everything kind of all the information around it, it makes me think about how sometimes things just seem so random and so chaotic, and how something is as simple as getting out of your car order to try to help people can just like take your life from you. Sarah is always, my significant other is always warning me, because I am, whenever I go up to a sidewalk, I'm kind of a lurker. Yeah. You know what I mean, Hannah Scott? Like, I'm always like right
on
the, because I want to go.
Right on the person.
I want to go somewhere. And so I don't want to stand 3 feet back. And so like, she's my mom.
Same.
She always tugs me back and she says, get back, don't stand so close. And I say, why? And she always says, it would take somebody to drift over 6 inches to run right into you. And I was just thinking about that in reading about this story. Have they set up any kind of fund or anything like that for, or is it, because I know that sometimes officers They set up something.
Oh my gosh. And I should know the name of this. There's in our state, there's a very specific group that does that all the time. Behind the Badge is the organization that does that.
Okay.
And I'm not 100% sure if they are calling this a line of duty death. They might be, because she got out and was trying to assist, but she wasn't officially on duty. So right. The badge would still help either way though.
And as far as, you know, I wonder, Seattle's not the biggest city in the world, but I do wonder how the kind of community at large is kind of reacting to it, other than everybody's just kind of sad around it, because it is just such a sad circumstance.
You know, I hope, just me personally, covering things that I do, I hope that people listen to some of the interview that I played this afternoon on Tom and Curly, or go and read about it somewhere, and listen to some of the things that this officer was about and the things that she believed in, and make a difference in the ongoing debate over what was going to happen with our police department, what our reimagined, you know, policing and public safety is going to look like as this whole participatory budgeting starts. And understand, because people in the community, the people in community who are for abolishment of the police, this woman was, she was an officer who could have changed their minds. So I think it's a tragic thing that this woman was taken, in my opinion, and especially just trying to get out and do the right thing. So I hope somebody learns something from her and does something in her honor, but we'll see what happens.
Hannah Scott, thanks so much for popping in on Nights. I really do appreciate the update on it, and we appreciate your time very much. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to be going over some of the goofs and gaffes from President Joe Biden at the G7 summit, and also what it means to be politically consistent. We'll take a really, really quick break. We'll be right back after this. In all of my years of talking about politics and talking about government and talking about political officials, I have drawn a conclusion that I think would surprise most people, which is that I don't think most people actually like talking about politics or talking about government or talking about presidential candidates or governors or whatever it is. I don't think that most people actually like to talk about those kinds of things. I think that people like to talk about their feelings, and they use presidential figures or governors or city council members as kind of an avatar for their emotional state. Give you an example. I got a friend of mine who cares very much about the environment. Oh man, does she care about the environment? That's her one priority in her life. She talks a lot about deforestation. She talks a lot about all the trash that you might see in Mumbai. She talks about the Pacific Gyre, that huge kind of trash island that's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And she cares about those things very much. And when you talk to her about, let us say, Donald Trump, she feels as if Donald Trump specifically contributes directly to those ills in society. So her emotional state is tied up to the environment, and then she views Donald Trump as being kind of the enemy of the environment, so she hates Donald Trump, right? This is what I mean about how people don't really care about politics. They don't really care about government. They care about their feelings, and this is how we get President Joe Biden, because so many people just didn't like Donald Trump, which is totally fine, right? There's a lot of things to not like about President Donald Trump. He's rude, he's crass, he can be misogynistic in so many ways, he can be chauvinistic in so many ways. He had policies that many people would look at and say, what is this guy thinking? Why would you go and compliment a murderous dictator over in North Korea? I get it. There are lots of things out there to not like about the guy. And so people largely voted with their feelings. And again, you can't fault people for doing that. But one of the things that I find so frustrating about it is that when you vote with your feelings, you get a Joe Biden who has gotten a pass by and large by mainstream media for his multiple goofs, his multiple gaffes, and things that if Donald Trump did these things, you would laugh at him and you would mock him. And again, rightfully so. If the sitting president of the United States whoever it is, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, I don't care, Jimmy Carter, if they went to the G7 or G8 summit, whatever it was, and they said the things that Joe Biden said, and they had the kind of gaffes that Joe Biden had, you would think that that person is unfit to be president of the United States. Again, this is one of the issues when you vote with your feelings around a thing. Joe Biden came out and he said that he was going to be kind of an antidote to Donald Trump, and he was going to fix all of the things that Donald Trump got wrong, and that he was going to be anti-Wall Street, and then he was going to be for the middle class. I think he says bottom up, middle out is his fun little statement. And then he has done things, he has initiated policies that have been in direct contradiction to those statements. But if you go around and you ask people, this is what's so fascinating about it, if you ask people about how they feel about certain policies from the Biden administration, they either don't know, they don't have an opinion, or they haven't heard about them. Which reinforces my initial premise even more, which is that people vote with their feelings. And Joe Biden, or at least the Biden administration, has been so inoffensive and so kind of unassuming that people don't have the same kind of anger that they might have towards the Trump administration. And I would suggest to you that if you are happy with the Biden administration, if you do just kind of a cursory Google search as to what you can find out about the Biden administration and their multiple failures, you would be as outraged as anybody else would be. That if you actually took the time to go through all of the things that the Biden administration has done wrong, and you played a fun little game where you removed Trump from the headline, excuse me, you removed Biden from the headline, and you put in Trump in the headline, you would be very, very, very upset. Let's just go through a couple of examples. Let's just imagine that this headline reads, Donald Trump says, I'm going to get in trouble with staff if I don't call from a pre-approved list of reporters. Would that be upsetting to you? If you're a Biden guy or a Biden gal out there, would that be upsetting to you if you heard that Donald Trump was only talking to reporters from a pre-approved staff list? It would be upsetting to me. I would say, hey man, we have freedom of the press here. You have to answer questions from the press. You are held accountable to the press. But instead, what we have is the sitting president, Joe Biden, doing exactly that.
I'm sorry, I'm going to get in trouble with staff if I don't do this the right way. Jennifer Jacob, Bloomberg.
Just imagine if that was Donald Trump. You would be outraged. And rightfully so. This is what I'm trying to say. The thing that always gets me is that people are willing to make excuses for politicians if they fall within their fun little bracket. And I am desperate to try to get people to stop doing that. Desperate. Because if you're unwilling to call it out on both sides, you're a bad actor. And you're at that point in time, you're not even engaging in government. You're engaging in tribalism. You're just engaging in this me versus you nonsense. So additionally, I want you to imagine that President Donald Trump, if he was still in office, he said that COVID-19 was a system that we would use to put vaccines into states. I know that doesn't make any sense, but let's just imagine that President Donald Trump came out and he didn't know what COVID-19 was. And he thought that COVID-19 was a system that we were going to use to get vaccines to states. Would you mock that person? Would you think that that person was not fit to be president of the United States?
COVID is, I know you all know, but a lot of people may not know what COVID is. That is a system whereby they're going to provide funding for states to be able to get access to vaccines.
That's a pretty massive gaffe. That's a pretty massive goof. And that is the sitting president of the United States. And for all his fun kind of talk about he was going to come back and be this return to normalcy, what I see from the Biden administration is not necessarily a return to normalcy in the way that you might think, but the Biden administration is a return to normalcy for some multinational corporations and for some members of Wall Street who were using the Democratic Party as an in to the international trade markets. Right? I mean, that's all this really is. Let's just get down to brass tacks. I mean, when the Republicans are in office, they cut deals for all their buddies. And when the Democrats are in office, they cut deals for all their buddies. It just matters who is backing them. And I'll remind you again that Wall Street was backing Joe Biden during his candidacy 4-1 compared to Donald Trump. So I would encourage people again in the future to look out for when you are voting with your feelings or thinking with your feelings. I get it here every single night on Cairo Nights. It's actually pretty disgusting. It's actually pretty sad, to be honest with you. You see people, they text in and they say, Jack Stein, Joe Biden is a blah, 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 blah. And it's just sad because you look at that person and you say, I can't take you seriously as a thinker. I can't take you seriously as an individual if you're willing to do those kinds of things. The only thing that I could possibly take you seriously on is if you are the kind of person who's willing to say, hey, you know what? I voted for Joe Biden, and when I saw what he did at the G7 summit, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed, and his policies have been embarrassing. Then I could take you seriously, even if you are a Democrat. Then I could take you seriously, and I could say, oh, okay, so you're a good actor, because you're willing to call it out as you see it. And as soon as we start calling it out as we see it, we can move away from this kind of left v. right nonsense. And we can actually start fixing the things that we need to fix in our state, in our country, in our county, so on and so forth. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Tarek is in the ones and twos chair. Didn't conjugate that sentence correctly. Tarek, how are you doing this evening, buddy?
I'm doing excellent. How about you?
I'm okay. I was doing a little bit better than I was doing on Friday, but I read a story about a bunch of people who were working at... Now, you're going to have to tell me with this name, because I've never been to this restaurant. Salar? And June Baby. They are two restaurants that are under the chefage of Chef Eduardo Jordan, and he has been accused of misconduct by 15 women.
Oh, no.
And the staff decided to quit en masse. And why I say that this is good news is because I do think that people need to recognize that there are some circumstances in the workplace that you just shouldn't put up with. Now, I'm all about, you know, negotiating with your boss and having a voluntary transaction of ideas with you and your boss where you talk about your salary and you talk about your hours and that kind of stuff. But I also want to remind people that Jack Stein once took a former employer to court over an issue.
Oh.
And I'm not afraid to admit it, because I think that in some ways an employer can take advantage of their employees, and that we should stand up for ourselves and we should say, I am unwilling to put up with this kind of treatment. And Tarek, just as an example, a friend of mine was working for a 5-star restaurant, it was a restaurant that was trying to get Michelin rated. Okay.
Ah, okay.
The owners had some friends in that restaurant. These friends show up wasted. They're totally obliterated out of their minds. They show up to the restaurant. They demand the best seats. They demand the best service. It just so happens that one of the cooks was also eating at the restaurant that night. And so he goes up to these people and he says, hey, can you guys calm down a little bit? This is a nice restaurant. And so these people started swearing at this guy. They started throwing racial slurs his way. They started pushing him and shoving him. And when he went, hey, man, I actually work here, one of the people took a swing at him. It was a huge brawl. They threw wine bottles. It was a huge ordeal. Now, normally what an owner would do is they would say, I'm kicking out those drunk ruffians. But because they were friends of the owner, he fired the guy that actually tried to defend his restaurant. And so as a result of that, the entire staff quit, because they all said, we don't want to work for somebody who is going to allow a member of his staff to be assaulted and demonized in that way. We're not going to allow people to throw racial slurs around and have the owner just excuse it. So I say that this is good news for these people. And even though they're going to miss out on their jobs, I think that there's something about dignity and having the ability to say, I will not be treated that way. And Tarek, you're a young guy.
Yeah.
You know what it's like to have somebody insult you, right? I mean, you know what it's like to have somebody get in your face and tell you
exactly
that you're, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you do it all the time to me. But, you know, it's, nah, just kidding around. He's a great guy, everyone. No, but so I do have a good example for this, though, because back in high school, in my pre-radio days, I worked at a grocery store, which shall remain nameless, because not because I wanted to protect their identity, but because they are irrelevant in Northern California. Anyway, I'm not messing around here. And this place, the culture established by the boss was so negative, so just not good. Not a great place to work at all, because the culture was very much the boss tells you what to do. If you don't listen, you get in trouble. And even if the boss says something that's like, cancel culture-esque, like you probably should cancel them for saying that, they're going to get away with it. Seeing like what you mentioned about the employees walking out, seeing the 15 people coming out and not being afraid is a good sign, because I totally get your angle about, you know, talking with your boss about a raise or anything along those lines. But at the same time, you need to be provided with a solid working environment at least. And when the culture is bad or it prevents you from being mentally okay, that's not good. And I really wish and I hope that this these notes are taken for the store I used to work at for 3 years, because if that culture had been much better, then I'd probably be, I would have been a better bagger. I would have. I just didn't know how to put bananas, put bananas at the bottom. Just was not a great pulling in carts and throwing them on the ground. Yeah, that was just me. Not the career for me. But
I think that you hit a really good point, which is that a workplace needs a healthy culture. A workplace is kind of like a family.
Absolutely.
Which is why, Tarek, as an example, have I ever come down on anybody? Have you ever heard me yell at anybody? Have you ever heard me?
Well, let's pull everybody, and into the vaults. No, not at all. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's my point, is that when you have like a healthy culture and when you understand that sometimes people have bad days or sometimes people don't know how to do a thing or sometimes somebody else has to get involved, that contributes to a healthier family kind of unit within a workplace, I feel like, which is why I always try to say to myself, even if I'm frustrated with something or something is upsetting to me, I always try to remind myself, I have no idea what's going on in that other person's life, so they deserve my kindness and my empathy and my patience and all that kind of stuff. So, Tarek, we have to get out of here. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to be talking about the homeless issue from a perspective of someone who was homeless, me. We'll take a really quick break. We will be right back after. Oh, I should say this as well, Tarek. In the next segment, we're also going to be talking about dignity. And we're going to be talking about what it means to live a dignified life and how we can offer these homeless individuals a little bit of dignity. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this.